everybody. My name is Stephanie, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Yeah, I was giving Terry a little bit of a hard time. He was uptight about the introduction. I went, but I'm the one that's got to talk, right? But it's not all about him. Oh, I forgot. It's not all about me either. What was I thinking? First, I'd like to thank Meg. She's not here tonight because she's got a granddaughter who's performing on stage. But she invited me. Jane was willing to set things up for me and help me get a plane ticket here. And then got to spend some time with Terry this evening coming over from Salt Lake. So I'm grateful to be here, grateful to be anywhere. So there's two waters. Does it make any difference which one's mine? Thanks. First of all, I want to thank you because I understand that this is an AA meeting. And you are allowing an Al-Anon to talk to you. And you know what I have to tell you is that a lot of AAs don't want to even listen to Al-Anons because you think in our meetings we talk about you. But I want to tell you the first line of our opening is we take the focus off of them and put it on ourselves where we do have some power. So I am here and grateful that you will listen. Or at least let me be present. You don't have to listen. But anyway, thank you, Terry. Thank you, Jane. And thank y'all for being willing. You know, it's really true what Terry said. The reason I'm here is because I fell in love with a drunk. I mean, that's the bottom line. And how horrible I thought it was when the alcoholism became evident, how grateful I am today that there is a recovery program for that terrible disease. You know, so I need to tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in a little town in Texas, Midland. I'm 78 years old. I was born the oldest of three into a Catholic Italian family. Right there, yeah, I see a little girl raise her eyebrows. Yeah, there's a little bit of not being well in that scenario. So when I actually came into the program and I knew that alcoholism was a disease, I couldn't figure out why, because my mother and father were social drinkers. They never drank alcoholically. I didn't know why I had ended up in this program. And then somebody mentioned the term generational. And alcoholism is a generational disease. My mother was raised in an alcoholic home, so she was raised by an untreated Al-Anon, and I was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. So I'm going to tell you a few things about our home. There were some rules. If you do good, you get good. If you do bad, you better hold on. Also, you know, I was trying so hard to just be perfect. I looked at you, and you were so put together, and I was so less than. And I judged my insides by your outsides, and I never measured up. But let me tell you the main thing I need for you to hear about my family of origin. We never expressed any emotions, and no emotions were ever validated. We were always just fine. Thank you very much. And my mother had a sign put in the front yard that said, "We are fine. Thank you very much." You know, I never saw any emotions. Nobody ever got angry. I take that back. My mama got mad at my daddy one time in the 18 years that I lived at home. She started crying, walked out, slammed the door, got in the car, and left. What I learned as a young person was don't make people angry or they're going to leave. So my people-pleasing was put in place at a very early age. Wait, I forgot to start my timer. I do that every time. So we were always fine. Everything was fine. I never had an opportunity to say I'm scared or anything. We were just fine all the time. I'm a senior in high school, and I meet the guy that I fell in love with, and his name is Bill. We dated for 4.5 years, and after we graduated from college, we got married. And we moved to Austin. We were living in San Antonio at the time. And we moved to Austin, and that's where we began our journey together. Now, because I'd never seen any drinking in my family of origin, I didn't pay much attention to any with Bill until he started coming home from these trips that he was taking, and he'd say, guess what? They had served free alcohol on the plane. And then he'd come home and he'd say, guess what? We had our meeting wrapped around happy hour. He said, it is so great. The next thing you know, some beers start showing up in my refrigerator, and I'm starting to count them. Now, we had not even been married a year, and I'm already counting the beers, because it doesn't look right, because I didn't know anything about that from my family of origin. So I'm counting Bill's drinks and wondering why he has to keep replenishing the beer. After we had been married for 3 years, I became pregnant, and we had our first child. It was a little girl. Her name was Laura. Now, I had been a school teacher, and it was my passion. I taught school. It was exactly like I was born, and God said, you're going to teach school. And I taught first grade, and I loved every minute of it. But when I became pregnant, I was given the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom. And so now we've got our little girl. I'm with the man that I love. Everything is just beautiful. 21 months later, we have our son. His name is Wes. And now it couldn't get any better, right? We finished our schooling. Bill's got a job he loves. We've got two healthy children, thank you, God. And now I get to be a stay-at-home mom. Now, what that meant for me was that I could keep my eyes on Bill. I could keep my eyes on Laura. And I had brought that sign from my mother's house, and I put it in my front yard. We are fine, thank you very much. So I made sure that everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing. Now, you know that alcoholism is a progressive disease, so you know the beers increased. And so I'm counting the beers. And then I have Laura. You're going to hear a lot about Laura. She was born angry. And then she would tell you, no, Mom, I was just fine till Wes was born. And so, but every rule that was ever written, Laura broke. And she, her favorite word when she was a teenager was, whatever. And you could say things like, dinner will be ready in half an hour, and she'd go, whatever. She really did try as hard as she could to try my patience. And then we had Wes, and I'm telling you, he was perfect. He was so funny and so sweet and so good. So I'm counting Bill's drinks. I'm watching Laura trying to get her to sit down and behave. Please, just follow the rules. That's all I want you to do. And then I've got Wes, and he's just like his mom. He's trying to get his insides filled up by the outside. So he's playing soccer, and I'm on the field. You can do it. And he's playing baseball, and I'm cheering him on. And I'm doing this whole thing, trying to keep everybody together. And I have that sign, and Laura is ruining the sign. I cannot tell you. There is nothing. She would never. If you said, do this, she'd say, try and make me. And she was against me and Bill and everybody else. She was doing her own thing. And I'm trying so hard to get her to behave. Now, I got to teach school for 3 years before we had our children, and then I got to be a stay-at-home mom. And I kept the focus on the family. And I tried to get my insides filled up by the outsides. So I was Girl Scout leader. I was secretary of the service organization. I was president of the PTA. I kept trying to get me to feel good by the outsides. So anyway, so here's what I'm doing. I'm doing service, all these organizations. I'm taking care of Wes and I'm cheering him on. I'm counting Bill's drinks. I'm trying to get Laura to sit down and be quiet. And so I have to tell you a story. In the middle of all this, we had a beautiful border collie. Her name is Flopsy. Prettiest dog you ever saw. Well, Flopsy became pregnant, and we've never had that experience before. So I wanted to be sure I was doing it right, so I decided I was going to shampoo Flopsy before delivery day. So I shampooed her and everything, and then I thought, some dogs run to dry, and some dogs you towel dry. And I wanted to do it right. And I read on the bottle, and it said, do not use on pregnant dogs. And I called the vet, and I said, oh, my gosh, what have I done? And he said, well, it's about 2 weeks till the puppies are born. Let's just wait and see. I said, okay. 2 weeks later, the first puppy was born, and it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, I have killed this litter of puppies. And he said, Stephanie, there's more to come. Let's see what happens. About an hour later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, I didn't kill them all. We have a healthy puppy. And he said, oh, I'm so happy. About an hour later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott, and I said, Dr. Pigott, now we've got two healthy puppies. And he said, I'm really happy for you, Stephanie. And then about an hour later, another puppy was born, and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott. Flopsy had seven puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. The last puppy was born, and it was teeny tiny. And he couldn't breathe. And I said, Dr. Pigott, what am I going to do? This little guy can't breathe. And he said, do you have any alcohol in your home? Yes. And he said, well, put some on the end of a spoon, put it in the puppy's mouth, and massage it down the puppy's throat. It will break up that phlegm, and the puppy's going to be okay. And I said, okay, I'm going to try and do that. And he said, and then, Stephanie, sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. You could tell there was something wrong in our family just by looking at me. But I'm trying so hard. I want so, now I've got all these puppies. And I have on this new wrap I've never worn before. I got to get it right, too. Doesn't seem to make any difference. You can come to the program, but you don't get all well. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I've got these puppies. I've now got these teenagers, and I can't get Laura to behave, and I'm trying to support Wesley, and Bill's drinking is escalating, and I am exhausted. I have no idea. And I am, you know, since you couldn't express your emotions in my family, the way I express how I feel is I cry. I cried all the time. And the kids would come in and they'd go, Mom, are you okay? And I go, yes, I'm just fine. And they, Mom, what's the matter? Nothing. So the message I gave my kids was, Mom cries when nothing's wrong. But I cried all the time. I'm watching Bill drink, and I knew there was something wrong. I just didn't know what it was. But I felt like we were all dying. I couldn't keep a thought. I had gone back to teaching because I just needed to do something, and I was trying to take care of Wesley and support him, and really, I got calls about Laura all the time, and I just couldn't do anything about that, but I was just so tired, and I knew something terrible was happening. So I looked at Bill one day, and I said, I don't know what's wrong with you, but I can't live like this anymore. I said, I love you too much to watch you kill yourself, and I don't know what's going on, but I think you're dying. And I said, you either have to leave or you have to get sober. And he said, well, I'm leaving, but it's not because you asked me to. It's because I can't live with you anymore. And In retrospect, I understand that today. But at the time, I thought, I don't care. Just go. Just leave. And, you know, in the process, the thing that happened to me at this point was that I realized that I was trying to do this marriage and this family all by myself. Laura had had to have jaw surgery, and I was in the hospital, and they were getting ready to operate on our beautiful daughter. I have to tell you this because I missed it a minute ago. She, her, beautiful to look at, but when you turned her sideways, she had a very protruding chin. So they're going to go in and break her jawbone and scoot it back and then wire her mouth shut. That was my favorite part. I loved it. But the reason I'm telling you that is because she was going in for major surgery, and I was standing there in that hospital room all by myself. Bill was passed out at home. And that's when I realized I've been doing this marriage and this family all by myself, and I couldn't do it anymore. And so when I asked him to leave, he said, I'm going. But not because you asked me to, but because I can't be here anymore. And I thought, I don't care. Just go. So that was on a Friday, and on Monday I got a call from one of his friends, and he said, I understand you kicked Butler out. And I said, Jerry, something's terribly wrong with this man. I said, I can't do it anymore. I said, I am just exhausted. And he said, well, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to take you to a meeting. Will you go with me? And at that point, I would have done anything, because I had no idea what was happening to our family. I just knew we were dying. Bill's going to die, and we're going to die too. And I didn't know what to do, so Jerry took me to my very first Al-Anon meeting on July the 24th of 1985. And I walked into that meeting, and I sat down, and I cried. And y'all said, can we have your name? And I went, and y'all said, just keep coming back, just keep coming back. And then you said things to me like I could hear. You said, if you don't want to live like this anymore, you don't have to. We have a solution for you. What you need to do is go to meetings. You need to get a sponsor. You need to read the literature. And you need to work the steps. And I went, okay, okay, okay. And they said, can we just have your first name? And I went, okay. But you know what? I could hear you. But you know what you told me was this piece of information that I didn't think I could live with. You told me that alcoholism was a disease. I did not know that. I had been judging my husband and finding him lacking all these years. I had been thinking, just put it down. What is the matter with you? Don't you see what's happening here? I had no idea he suffered from a disease. And then you told me that if you had raised children in an alcoholic home, you had raised sick kids. And I thought my heart would break. And you said, but you did the best you could with the knowledge you had at the time. And I thought, well, I didn't know. And I was just crying. And then you told me I needed to get a sponsor. And I cannot tell you. You know, we know this is a spiritual program, right? God started working on me from the get-go. He put a lady in my life. Her name is Blanche. I didn't know she had been in Al-Anon for 24 years. I just listened to her, and she touched my heart. Well, Blanche had this thing where we had to meet every week for an hour until I was through with the ninth step. And so every week I would go and sit on her couch, and I would just... You know, nobody had ever listened to me before, and Blanche was willing to listen. And after 55 minutes, she would say, would you like some feedback on that, or would you just like me to listen? I go, I want feedback. And she said, well, what I need to tell you right now is that we're going to try to change your concept of a higher power. She said, I think you've been living with a God that you felt could punish you. And I said, yes, I've been trying to do good. She said, let me tell you about God. You don't have to do good. He loves you no matter what. And he can't stop loving you. It's called grace. You can't earn it and you can't make it go away. It's grace. And she said, we're going to work through these steps and you're going to see how God loves you. And so Blanche and I started working, and I'm telling you, I was so grateful. When Blanche hugged you, you felt it from your head to your toe. But every week I'd show up, and I'd go, little, 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 little. And then I'd try to listen while she gave me feedback. And I was really grateful for it, because she would call me, and I could hear her. This is the one person in my life that I listened to. I hung on every word she said. Because she had what I wanted. She had this gift of serenity, and she just loved for fun and for free. Unconditional love, that's what I got from my Blanche. And I was so grateful. Well, 2 weeks after I asked Bill to leave, he called. He said, Steph, I've been trying to sober myself up out at Willie's, and I just can't do it. He said, I need help. And so on August the 6th of 1985, Bill began his spiritual journey. And I would tell you that that's all we needed for us to live happily ever after. Aren't y'all going to laugh? Really? Don't you think, get them sober and we'll live happily ever after? If you're an Al-Anon, that's what you think. Or an untreated Al-Anon, that's what you think. Just get them sober and then we'll be fine. That is just the furthest, funniest thing, really, I'm going to tell you all night. Because that's just not the way it works. I was working with Blanche, and Bill was working with Lon, and it was like we were on a second honeymoon. We had a common language. We respected each other. You know, when you come to Al-Anon, we talk about detachment. And detachment is to let go and let God. And I thought, you AAs, you've got Bill. I'm letting go, and I'm letting God. But then we have this little problem. Her name is Laura. She did not like a drunk daddy, but she really didn't like a sober daddy. You know, he was helping her hold her, you know, doing the right thing. So I have to tell you about Laura. She is now a senior in high school. She's got 3 months till graduation. And I wanted it to look right. I've got my sign up there. And so, but she had broken some rules. And Bill and I had grounded her. We said, you know, you're going to be home for a while. Well, she came and she said, Mom, the University of Texas is playing ball. I really want to see them. Can I go watch the game? Bill and I sat and we visited about it. And we said, yeah, you just need to be home by 6 o'clock. This was on a Sunday evening. She said, I will be. Sunday evening at 6 o'clock came and Laura didn't come home. And she didn't come home on Monday. And she didn't come home on Tuesday. Now, I am going to my Al-Anon meetings, and I am saying, my God, what am I going to do? And you said, well, what would you be doing if this weren't happening? And I'm, are you kidding me? This is happening. She's messing up my picture. She's just got 3 months till graduation. Come on, God. You know, and then I'd call Blanche, and she would say, well, you know, God loves Laura more than you do. And I said, that's good, because I'm killing her when I see her. I could not believe it. What are we going to do? You know, and Bill's going to his sponsor, and I'm crying and praying, and, you know, it's, I don't know what I'm going to do now. She's messing up my picture. She just needs to graduate. That's all. We'll be fine. Well, on Wednesday of that week, I'm getting in my car after teaching, and I have a moment of clarity. And God says to me, if what you're doing isn't working, try something different. And I thought, I have been trying to love Laura well. It's not working. And so that Friday, she calls and she acts as if nothing has happened. Hey, Mom, listen, I'm going to be home about 5 o'clock, but I'm going to miss this show if you would tape it for me. And I said, Laura, I love you and you can't come home. That anger of hers, she went, what'd you say? I said, I love you, and you can't come home. This is one of those minutes where God does for you what you cannot do for yourself. That wasn't me. I wanted to get my daughter out of high school. Then we'd be fine. And God said, nope. You've been trying to love her. Now you need to let her go. So I did. Bill came home that afternoon, and he said, Steph, what's going on? I said, I heard from Laura. And he said, oh, thank God, where is she? I said, I don't know. I told her she couldn't come home. And he said, Steph, do you think that was a good idea? He hadn't been to any Al-Anon meetings. I said, I don't know what else to do. So that was a Friday. Saturday morning, I went to my Al-Anon meeting. I am crying like a baby. Oh, no, what have I done? Oh, my gosh, my daughter's out there. What's going to happen to her? And one of the guys came up, and he patted my hand, and he said, did you know you could have a good day anyway? I did. I had a good day anyway. And I really had been listening to Blanche. God loved Laura more than I did. What I was doing wasn't working. I didn't know what else to do. So Bill, bless his heart, was looking for a way to get Laura well, and so he was calling around Texas, and he found a treatment center for a teenager with an anger management problem. And so I found out that, you know, I could get in touch with Laura, so I called the house where she had a girlfriend, and I said, Laura, I need to tell you something. Your daddy and I found a place where you can get some help if you're willing to go. And can you hear her? What do I have to do? And I said, well, we'll come pick you up in the morning. Fine. We picked Laura up. I don't know that I've ever cried so much. My daughter did not look like my daughter. She had been living on the streets. She had been sleeping under park benches. She had been beat up in pool halls. She did not even look like our girl. And I cried all the way to Denton. And all I could think was, at least she's alive and she's safe. Thank you, God. And I went back home, and, you know, Bill and I think, well, I guess we'll see what happens now. And I get a phone call from Laura, and she said, Mom, I need to ask you a question. And I said, what's that? And she said, how would you feel about me being an alcoholic? And I said, any 12-step program you want to latch on to will be fine with me. She said, we've been inventorying my drinking, Mom, and I've got a drinking problem. This coming April the 6th, my daughter will celebrate 36 years of sobriety. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't believe it. So here's the little hard part, right? We have family week. Oh, my gosh. This is where Bill and Laura had to sit knee to knee, and Laura demanded that her dad make amends to her. And Bill refused, so Laura got up and threw a chair against the wall. And so the counselor says, I don't think she's ready to go home yet. So they suggested that she go to a halfway house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So that's what we did. We took Laura to a halfway house in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now let me tell you, I just wanted this daughter to graduate from high school. Do you know what God said? He said, let's let her graduate by correspondence, and let's give her a 12-step program to live the rest of her life by. I would have missed it. I just wanted that diploma. I just wanted us to look good. And it was like God said, yes, and here's more. You know, over the years that I've sat in meetings before, I've heard that God has four answers for our prayers. One of them is, yes, and here's more. Another one is, yes, I thought you'd never ask. Another one is, no, I love you too much. And another one is, no, not yet. And I think the answer that we got from God that day was, yes, and here's more. She's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. She's sober today. I get goosebumps because that was such a bad part of our life. So now Wes is getting ready to graduate. You know, but he's the kid that follows the rules. I mean, you know, he did it just like he was supposed to, went across the stage, right with his class, everything looks good. So now Wes is a freshman at the University of Texas. Laura's got a job, and I'm going to open AA meetings, and Bill's on this side, and Laura's on this side, and we're saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm crying through the whole thing. But it's a miracle. I never thought I would ever see that. So then one day, Bill comes home and he says, Steph, how would you like to move to Reston, Virginia? And I said, why would we do that? And he said, I'm tired of getting on airplanes. And he said, I think with Wes in school and Laura settled, I think we can go. And I said, let's move. I thought that would be great because houses in Austin, Texas were not selling in 1990. We weren't going anywhere. 2 weeks. Our house sold in 2 weeks. It was like, no, I didn't mean it. I don't want to really go. I love you, but I don't really want to go. Oh, my gosh. So the AAs are over there helping us paint and, you know, take up the carpet and everything, and the Al-Anons are there, and I'm sitting in the middle of the floor crying, and, you know, and our friend Tom came up, and he said, what is the matter with you? I said, I can't go. I just can't go. I said, I love Bill, and I don't want him to leave him. But you know what? I can't leave our children, and I can't leave my sponsor, and I can't leave my gynecologist, and I can't leave my grocery store, and I don't like change. And Tom says to me, you know what you have in Austin, Texas. Why don't you go see what you have in Reston, Virginia? You know what? They have AA in Reston, Virginia. They have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. I'm calling Blanche, and she said, what's the matter, honey? I said, Blanche, I sat through this whole meeting. They didn't mention one step. And I said, I don't even think they're talking about a higher power. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm telling them how we do it in Texas. She said, you might want to stop that. I did, and the meetings got much better. So are you kidding me? We are having the best time. It's like a second honeymoon for us. The kids are in Texas, and we're in Virginia. He's got a home group that he loves. I've got a home group that I love. I've got a teaching job in a little private school. He's got a job that he loves. Oh, my gosh, we're so excited. We can go to the movies in the middle of the day. I mean, it was great. And then I get a call from Laura. She says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what's that? And she said, I found Wes passed out. And I said, oh, bless his little heart. If you ever hear me say, bless his little heart, I'm having an Al-Anon slip. She said, Mom, I found Wes passed out last night. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. Is he sick? She said, Mama, Lon and I took Wes to his first AA meeting today. So on January the 10th, 1991, Wes began his spiritual journey. So I called Blanche. I said, Blanche, how many miracles does one family get? I said, I think we've used ours all up. And she says, are you limiting God one more time? So now when we go back to Austin, now we're in an AA meeting, and Laura and Wes and Bill and me, and I'm crying, and we're saying the Lord's Prayer. It's just, it is really, it is a God thing, if ever I've seen one. So then a few months go by, and I get a call from Laura. She says, Mom, I need to tell you something. I said, what's that? And she said, I'm pregnant. I said, no, you're not. She said, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. I said, no, sweetheart, you're not. I said, see, first you have the wedding, and then you have the baby. We did not have a wedding. We are not having a baby. She says, Mom, do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, do you want me to give it up for adoption? I said, no. And she said, what do you want? And I said, I want for you to not be pregnant. Blanche said I was opting for one of my unavailable choices. I do that a lot. So, what are you going to do? I didn't tell anybody. It made me look bad. I kept it secret. Well, we were having big book studies in our house on Wednesday evenings, and everybody's getting ready to leave, and I called Rita over. I said, Rita, come here, I need to tell you something. She said, what? And I said, it's bad. It's really, really bad. She said, what? I said, it's really bad. She said, Stephanie, what's the problem? I said, Laura is pregnant. And she went, hmm. I said, no, you don't understand. She's not married. She said, hmm. She said, why do you have to label it and find it lacking? Can't you just say it's what is? It's just what is. The most beautiful baby girl you have ever seen was born on June the 6th, 1992. Her name is Stephanie Grace. It was the happiest day of my life. And I would have missed it because it didn't look right. Oh my gosh, you know, Bill's there, I'm there, Wes is there. We didn't need to have a wedding. We just welcomed this beautiful baby. Well, I have to tell you a little story. I'm going to be jumping forward. Grace is in first grade. And the teacher asks everybody to introduce themselves. Grace stands up and she says, my name is Grace. I'm an alcoholic and I've got 7 years of sobriety. She had never heard anybody introduce themselves any other way. And the teacher was horrified. What'd you say? And she says, no, I'm not the alcoholic. My mom is. Oh, wow. That Grace of mine, I've got stories for you. But anyway, she's 30 years old today. So it's been a while. So then about a year later, I get a phone call from San Antonio, and they tell me that my daddy had an abdominal aneurysm, and he had died instantly. And as hard as that was for me to hear, that's how grateful I was that I had been a member of a 12-step program. I had made amends to my daddy. Everything was clean and clear. I had not one regret. Now I'm going to tell you the part of my story that I wish were different. And I understand that there are things that you cannot change. One of the things you cannot change is the past. And I've gotten to where I accept that today. In February of 1994, with 8.5 years of sobriety, Bill Butler could not live with his humanness, and he committed suicide. I need you to hear two things. AA works. Bill cherished his sobriety. Depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. Bill had been doing great. He took himself off of his antidepressants because he was feeling so good. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was to call our children. Laura said, "Mama, Daddy loved you too much. He wouldn't do that." And I called Wes, and he said, "Mama, Daddy would never go off and leave you. He loved you too much." It's not about love. It's about a disease. Bill and I had been to the grocery store and out to eat the night before. I had no idea. We were doing great. I went and talked to his psychiatrist who had been giving him the antidepressants, and I said, "What happened?" And he said, "It was an instantaneous decision. If Bill could have lived through that instant, he would be alive today." I am so grateful for Blanche. She said, "Stephanie, you need outside help. You need to get somebody to talk to." And I found a gal, her name was Nancy, and she said, "I need to tell you something. When your life changes in one instant and will never be the same again, it's called trauma. You have been traumatized." And she said, "There are things that go along with that." And she said, "You'll just need to stay close to me and let's talk about it." So all the folks in Reston, Virginia wanted to have a service for him. And we went to that church where we had been going to meetings. And one of my teacher friends looked at me and she said, "Stephanie, who are all these people?" And I said, "This is my family. Because y'all told me when I came, I would never have to do anything alone again. And you kept your word." And we brought him back to Texas, and we had a beautiful graveside service for him. And I want you to know, it took every single piece of literature that I've read, every hug that I've been given, every meeting I've attended, to be able to put one foot in front of the other. I thought if Bill died, I would die. But because of your love and you holding me by the hands, I put one foot in front of the other. The children asked me to come home, and I said, "I can't." I said, "This is where I'm supposed to be." And almost 2 years to the day after Bill died, I walked into our house and I said, "He's not coming home." It took 2 years for me to get the information from my head to my heart. He's not coming home. It was just like, wow. I don't know what. I just didn't believe it. Well, Bill had been an excellent employee. And so the company he worked for had matched his funds, and they had put funds in. And so when he died, there's a lump sum of money. We've never had money. I didn't even know what to do with it. And so then I decided, well, I guess I'm going home. And the teacher said, "Where are you going?" Well, all I know is that I've missed sunsets. When you live in Virginia, the trees are so tall, you never get to see a sunset. And I said, and I found out that I love water. I would like to be near the water. And I have never lived in a new house before. I'd like that. And you know what God said? Thought you'd never ask. It was yes, and here's more. Got a new house, living on Lake LBJ, Granite Shoals, Texas, and the sun sets over Packsaddle Mountain right out my back door. Oh my gosh. So now I'm ready to live, and I decided that Grace and I were going to go travel and going to go on to, you know, cruises together and everything. And so I called the guy that I had invested the money with, and I said, Bruce, I've got a house. I need you to send the money from there to here, and let's get me going. And he said, okay. And so we waited. And we waited. And the money never came. I had bought a new house. And Bruce stole almost $300,000. It felt like another death in the family. I did not know what I was going to do. So I just sat and cried. It was just, I could not believe it. And I'm so grateful I've been going to open AA meetings because y'all told me I was supposed to pray for Bruce. And I prayed for that son of a bitch. Every day, I prayed for him this morning. There's a knot in my stomach, right? I couldn't get it to go away. I didn't know what to do. I had this new house, and now I have no money. And so I did press charges. There was a judge in Virginia that wanted to press charges against Bruce, and we pressed charges, and he went to prison for 2 years. That was the maximum they could give him. And he was ordered to make restitution. So one day I get a check in the mail, and I called Laura. Laura, he's making restitution. She said, Mom, that's great. How much is the check for? And I opened it, and it was for $25. She said, Mom, you're going to be really dead by the time he finishes paying y'all. So I really did not know what to do. I have a new house. I have no money, and I don't know what to do. You know what God did? He built an elementary school 7 minutes from my house, and they needed a first grade teacher. Can you believe it? I was so excited. Oh, I got to go be with my first graders. And I get a paycheck, and I called Laura. I said, Laura, I'm going to be okay. And she said, Mom, why? I said, I got a paycheck. We're going to be okay. She said, how much was it? I opened it, and I started laughing. She said, what's funny? I said, it's not enough to make a house payment. She says, why are you laughing? And I said, I don't know. I know we're going to be okay. Look what God's done. We're going to be okay. You know what? I'm still in that house. 27 years later, I'm still living there. And I really couldn't thank Bruce, but I did understand that it was never about the money, but he wanted me back in the classroom. I had got to teach for 17 years in that little school, and I taught kids that have walked across my heart. I've had a Loki and a John and a Rosie, and they have just, I could hardly wait to get to school every day. What a joy. And I still wish Bruce would finish paying off, but that's not even important anymore. It's not, because God has shown me that I don't have to have that to be okay. I have a home group there in Marble Falls, Texas. We meet every Monday night at 7:30 and Thursdays at noon. I mean, I found my family back in my new home where I was. So I'm teaching school and going to meetings and, you know, trying to make a go of it, do what I can. So let's see where I am. I need to tell you about Blanche. No, I don't. I have to stop a minute and tell you this first. Oh, how much time do I have?
You're fine.
Okay. When I was in Virginia and Bill died, I had been sitting in meetings with this beautiful, wonderful woman. Her name was Dawn. And when she heard what happened, she called my house and she said, tell Stephanie if she ever needs anybody to talk to, she can call me. And so Dawn became my Virginia sponsor. I went and sat on her couch every day for weeks and weeks, and she just told me why I cried. But Dawn, oh my gosh, she would say things to me like, Stephanie, let's stay in present time, okay? And then she'd say, don't we serve an awesome God? And then she would help me get to present time and gratitude. So boy, when I had to leave her, I was so sad, but I went back to Texas and I got to be with Blanche. So now I have a Texas sponsor and a Virginia sponsor, and I'm teaching first grade and things are going great, and Laura has gotten married and not married and married and not married and married. So, but I need to stop for a minute and tell you about our boy, Wes. He is something else. But that boy could not live with his dad's death. He could not accept it. And he left Texas and he went to Wyoming and he got on a horse and he sent me a letter that said, Mom, I feel comfortable in my saddle. And I thought, well, whatever you have to do to be able to be at peace. Because, you know, I don't think people understand what a suicide does to a family. You think you're taking yourself out of your pain, but the pain you leave behind? Unbelievable. And then those of us that are left behind trying to figure out what we did wrong. How could we have saved you? Only because I have been going to Al-Anon these years and I have been talking about grief did I find out a suicide has nothing to do with anybody or anything except the person that takes their own life. There is nothing I could have done to save Bill Butler. And he loved me and I loved him. It's a disease. Okay, so Wes is up there working on this ranch and he tells me that. But after he's been there for a while, I get a call and a horse has thrown him and fallen on top of him and broken his back. And so Wes gets hooked on Oxycontin. The pain was so bad that that's what he did. And so we try to help him as much as we can. During the process, he found a gal and he got married to her and they have a little girl. But Wes tried to stay at home and take care of that little girl and all he did was pop pills. And so Wes ended up back in treatment again. Now, years later, let me tell you, I have no idea if Wes is sober or not. I have no idea if he's clean or not. What I know is that he knows that I love him. And he knows where to go for help. And he comes out to my house and goes fishing. 2 weekends ago, he caught an 8-pound bass. And then he caught a 10-pound catfish. And that boy is pretty happy today. But I see no signs. I don't know. But I'm not even looking for it. Because Al-Anon has taught me it has nothing to do with me. If he has the disease, he knows where to go for help. All I need to do is tell him I love him. And I do that. Okay, so now let's see if I can get us back. I need to tell you about Blanche. I love that woman. I am telling you, I would not be here tonight if it weren't for her. She and Dawn have helped me to breathe. To accept that there is a power greater than myself who never is going to go off and leave me. I feel so grateful. Well, Blanche was in an automobile accident. And she did not survive her injuries. And her daughter called me and she said, if you want to say goodbye to my mom, you better hurry. And I was there holding Blanche's hand when she took her last breath. And I could say, I hope you can see the faces of the people that you helped because you were willing to share. Now, we had a service for Blanche, and they asked me if I would say a few words. And so that morning, Laura calls, and she says, Mom, you are going to tell them how important Blanche was to our family, aren't you? And I said, Laura, you hated Blanche. She said, Mama, if it hadn't been for Blanche, I might not be sober today. She taught you to hold me accountable, to not accept unacceptable behavior, and there were consequences for my choices. And if she hadn't taught you that, I might not be sober today. Wow. So now Dawn and I, unbelievable. I'm going to try to get you to a place where I can sit down and believe that I have shared my story with you. Dawn is 91 years old. She's a beautiful woman. She has macular degeneration. She has been in Al-Anon for over 62 years. She's going to meetings on Zoom, and she loves them. And sometimes she'll go, I say, Dawn, you didn't answer. She said, I was at a meeting. Okay, Dawn, okay. She lives in Chicago, and I go up and see her every 3 or 4 months, but I call her every day. For a while, I was calling just to be sure she was alive. But now I'm calling her just to hear her voice. Just that, to see what she tells me. She says all the time, don't we serve an awesome God? And then she says, are you in present time? And I always say, no, I'm not. I'm worried about yesterday. And her favorite word to me is, Stephanie, it's done. I keep wanting to change the past. It's done. That's the one thing you can't change. It's done. Don't go there. Let's stay in present time and let's see what we can do about today, right now, here. Okay, so I've gotten you to that part. You know about Dawn. You know about Blanche. So now I need to tell you about Grace. I love that girl, but oh my goodness. Laura is her mama. One day, Grace comes up and she says, Grandma, I need to tell you something. I said, oh. She says, I'm pregnant. You know what my response was? How great is that? I had learned my lesson. 6 years ago this December, one of the greatest gifts I have ever been given was born. Her name is Harper. She's my great-granddaughter. I cannot tell you the joy that that child brings to me. Oh, my goodness. I adore her. Grace had a little trouble trying to be present all the time. So Laura is raising Harper today. And they, for some reason, they lived in town 45 minutes from me, and then they decided somebody wanted to buy their house, and they sold their house, and so now they've moved in kind of around the corner from me. Somebody said, isn't that great? And I said, until it isn't. I get to spend time with Harper, and I adore that child, and she adores me. I have to tell you, I have a Christmas cactus sitting on my windowsill. And the other day when Harper was over there, I said, look, look. And she said, what? And that cactus never blooms. And it had a bloom on it. I said, Harper, that's a God surprise. And she said, why do you say that, Dad? She calls me Dash. Long story. And I said, because God made the plant. And he surprised us with a bloom. It's a God surprise. Oh, my goodness. That child and I, we had snow in Texas not too long ago. Harper calls and she says, Dash, guess what? And I said, what? She says, we've got another God surprise. She's a joy. She's 6 years old and she's just excited about being alive. And she knows all about the program because her mama, Laura, is on a Zoom meeting almost every day, all the time. And Harper knows all about them. She and I went to church the other day, and in the Catholic Church, you don't say all of the Lord's Prayer. You stop after evil. And Harper starts pulling on me, and I said, what's the matter? She said, they didn't finish the prayer. She's been listening. She can say the Serenity Prayer without any help. You know, this program is generational, folks. And if you will stay here, there's more hope for your family than anything else. Because this is a fellowship where we get to love each other into wellness. And because of sponsorship and because I was willing to work the steps. And thank you, God, for step 6 and 7. I am telling you, those shortcomings of mine bite me all the time. But I know what to do about it. I can't fix it. But I can pray and say, I am willing for change to happen. And almost every time God says, oh, I'm so glad. Because he's ready to work with me. So, one more little thing. I taught school in this little school for 17 years. And then my knees started hurting. And I went to see the orthopedic guy. And I said, my knees hurt. And he said, how tall are you? And I said, I'm 5'2". And he measured me, and I'm 4'11". And I said, what happened to me? And he says, you've been standing on concrete for 34 years, and your disc have compressed. Well, my big mistake was telling Laura, because she says, Mom, one of these days you're going to be on eye level with those first graders. And so I had to retire, and I go to retire, and I'm crying. And the lady at the retirement center says, most people are really happy when they come here. I said, not me. I didn't want to retire. I love those kids. But you know what? Those young, they replaced me with a 23-year-old, of course. She could run circles around me. I'm still writing out my lesson plans, and they're doing PowerPoints on computers, which I cannot even. Anyway, so I'm supposed to be retired. But I cried a lot because I didn't know what to do with the rest of my life. I knew that I was going to get to, well, I didn't even have Harper when I retired because I retired 8 years ago, and I didn't think I'd ever get to, but now with Harper, that's the joy. But also, I've got my Al-Anon family, and I've learned that there are things out there that I do get to participate in. And every day, I am so grateful for the life I have, and I'm so grateful that God allowed me to be a school teacher. And I'm so grateful for the years that Bill and I had together. The memories are wonderful. And I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you one more little thing, because it just warms my heart. Bill and I were celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary. We're in Austin, and we're getting in the car, and we've gone out to dinner, and there's this song that comes on the radio, and Bill pulls up into a gravel driveway, and he opens the door, and he says, come on. And I said, what? And he says, we're going to dance. And I said, what? And the song was Anne Murray singing, May I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life. And we danced to that. Well, years later, I hear that song on the radio. And I am driving down the road in Granite Shoals, Texas, and I pull over to the side and I just sob. And I just sob because we'll never dance together again. And about, I don't know, some months later, the song comes over again. And I cry. And then not too long after that, the song comes on again. And I get the biggest grin on my face. What a great memory. Really? That's what I think grief is like. It hurts. It is horrible when you lose somebody you love or lose something that you love. But with time, you get to the place where you get to be grateful. And I am very grateful that y'all were kind enough to sit here tonight and to let me share with you. Thank you very much.